A blue sign hurtles through space toward a green planet. Turner. In a black and white movie, a logo appears. A ring of film surrounds the head of a thickly maned lion. A title appears. Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer presents... Against the background of a formal table setting, a montage shows the movie's cast. One by one, their faces appear in the center of a silver dinner plate. Marie Dressler as Carlotta Vance. John Barrymore as Larry Renault. Wallace Beery as Dan Packard. Jean Harlow as Kitty Packard. Lionel Barrymore as Oliver Jordan. Lee Tracy as Mac Cain. Edmund Lowe as Wayne Talbot. And Billy Burke as Millicent Jordan. In David O. Selznick's production of Dinner at 8, copyright 1933. This film is described for blind and visually impaired audiences by Descriptive Video Service, WGBH Boston. Described by Lisa Benjamin, read by Wendy Sacchichini, funded by the U.S. Department of Education. More titles appear. Screenplay by Francis Marion and Herman J. Mankiewicz. From the Sam H. Harris stage play by George S. Kaufman and Edna Ferber. Additional dialogue by Donald Ogden Stewart, directed by George Cukor. Musical score by Dr. William Axt. With Madge Evans, Karen Morley, Phillips Holmes, Jean Hersholt, Louise Closser-Hale, and Mae Robson. And Grant Mitchell, Elizabeth Patterson, Harry Beresford, John Davidson, Anna Duncan, Phoebe Foster, Hilda Vaughn, Edwin Maxwell, Edward Woods, and Herman Bing. Now, a curly-haired woman breezes into a spacious sitting room. She rushes toward a distinguished gray-haired man seated at a breakfast table.
Darling, I've got Lord and Lady Ferncliff. They'll come to dinner next Friday. I just had a radio from them on the boat. Wasn't that brilliant of me, getting the Ferncliff?
Yes, that was very brilliant of you. If you want the Ferncliff.
But I do. You remember them, darling. They entertained us in London.
I remember them well. And very dull it was, too. Australian mutton. And a lot of people who'd been buried for years and got up just to eat that mutton.
You don't realize how important this is, Oliver. Everybody will be after them. I thought you and Ferncliff had lots in common. Isn't he interested in shipping, too?
Mr. Oliver Jordan accepts.
Of course, it's terribly short notice.
A butler enters with Oliver's hat and coat.
Oh, thank you, Gustav.
Let's see. Lord and Lady Ferncliff, the Talbots, the Doctor and Lucy. Oh, I saw that your precious Carlotta Vance arrived on the Europa yesterday.
Carlotta? Oh, fine. Let's have her.
Of course, she goes with quite a different crowd than the Ferncliffs over there. All those impossible, fast people. At her age, too.
Oh, nonsense. Carlotta has no age.
Oliver, just because she was once your favorite actress.
A slender young woman enters dressed in a robe.
Dad, I thought you'd gone.
Well, if it isn't her ladyship.
Oh, don't look at me, I'm a sight. Didn't sleep a wink.
I thought I heard you moving around in your room.
Couldn't you sleep either?
Nerves?
Oh, I don't know, I suppose so.
I say, Pips... There isn't anything really wrong, is there?
She shakes her head.
Now, how can the shipping business go on if the owner's tie isn't straight?
She fixes his polka dot bow tie. Oliver playfully pats his daughter's cheek, then walks out.
Paula, I'll want you and Ernest for dinner next Friday. When does his boat land?
I don't know, Mother.
You don't know? Aren't you being awfully vague about your fiancé? I certainly hope Ernest is more excited about this wedding than you seem to be. And don't forget, we're going shopping this afternoon.
Paula gazes pensively out a window.
I can't this afternoon, Mother. I'm sorry.
But you've got to. You've simply got to. Do you realize you're being married in a month and you haven't got a stitch of trousseau? Why can't you go shopping with me this afternoon?
I've an engagement.
What engagement?
Millicent grips a telephone.
I'm going to a concert.
A concert? Oh, That reminds me, when Cousin Hattie comes in this morning, I want to give her our Philharmonic seats for Thursday. Whom are you going to the concert with? Hello? Dr. Talbot's residence? Mrs. Talbot, please. Mrs. Oliver Jordan calling. Paula, what concert?
Turning, she discovers her daughter is gone.
Lucy? How are you, my dear? Listen, Lucy, Lord and Lady Ferncliffe arrive from London tomorrow, and I want you and Wayne a week from tonight. Yes. Dinner at 8?
In an office, a secretary eyes her watch, then approaches a clerk.
Mr. Jordan's late.
He probably stopped at the dock. Where'd you put those invoices?
What invoices?
For the Castilian.
Well, what's the hurry? She's not sailing till tomorrow.
As Oliver Jordan enters, his two assistants hurry to greet him.
Oh, good morning, Mr. Jordan.
Good morning. It's cold outside.
Well, I thought it was real pleasant.
Not down on the dock.
Cold down there, all right.
Yes. Oh, just a minute.
Heading toward an inner office, the two stop and turn back.
The Castilian isn't going to sail tomorrow.
What?
Not sailing?
No, you're sending a boat out with out enough cargo in it to keep her down in the water.
No Jordan boat has missed a trip in 60 years.
I know that.
Will the Santa Clara sail next week?
Oh, cheer up, Fosdick. Cheer up. It's just as good a line as it ever was.
The best in the world.
Right you are. Some other people think so, too. Wish I knew who it was trying to buy up our stock.
You're not going to lose control of the line, Mr. Jordan. Mr. Jordan, your father, your grandfather...
No, of course not. And we're going to put up a fight they wouldn't be ashamed of either. And the first step in that, did you get a hold of Mr. Packard?
He's coming in this morning.
Good.
Fosdick leaves with Oliver's hat and coat.
Mr. Jordan... Miss Carlotta Vance is here to see you.
Carlotta? Here? Outside?
A stout, jowly woman enters.
Oliver! Ducky! Oh, I never so glad to see anyone in all my life.
Carlotta! This is a surprise. Why, you look marvelous.
Do I? I do, don't I?
Divine.
Oh, Oliver, actually... You're looking handsomer than ever.
She brushes her fingers across the hair at his temple.
Oliver.
A little gray.
Gray, nonsense. Distinguished.
Come on over and sit down.
Oh, Oliver.
Let me look at you.
He leads her to a chair.
Now, what are you doing over here?
Trying to mend my shattered fortune.
Well, you picked a nice day for it. And the right part of town, yeah. Too. There are our financiers sitting on those benches out there. Oh. Now, come along, Carlotta. Who did you come down to the Battery to see? Huh? Not me.
No, sir. I'll not deceive you. I came down here to see the United States Customs Inspector. Isidore J. Greenbaum, the son of a... Say, why shouldn't I own 6 fur coats?
Why not, indeed? It's perfectly reasonable.
And when I was standing in the customs office, what did I sight? Jordan Line. He says, aye to myself, says I. Maybe the old gentleman is in. And here you are.
Well, I'm very grateful to Mr. Greenbaum.
Oliver, I'm as flat as a mill pond. I haven't got a sou.
Oh, Carlotta, go along with your... What about all those gilt-edged securities? Mm. And your theater? Well, that alone ought to bring you enough to live on.
My chief reason for coming to this country is to get rid of that rat trap.
What's the matter with it?
Why, for 6 months they haven't taken the lock off the door. It's now known as the Spider's Rendezvous. Can't collect rent from them. You know, when old Stanfield gave me that theater, I thought it was very magnificent of the old boy. Now I wish I'd taken a sandwich.
Oh, Lotta, you always exaggerated. I bet you're rolling in wealth.
Well, what have I got? Railroads, oil, cotton. That's what they gave you in my day. I only could take what they had. Well, you know what's happened to those things.
You are down to cases. International star returns to stage.
Never. I'll have my double chins in privacy. I've seen too many hardened arteries dragged out to make a first night holiday. Oh, no.
Oh, now, Carlotta, your stuff must bring you in a little something. It can't cost you an awful lot to live over there.
Oh, no? Well, you saw how it was like at Antibes. You and Millicent. 10 and 20 for luncheon, cocktails. Most of them staying on for dinner. Very same thing at my house in London. Everybody popping in. Noel, Winston, and once in a while Wales. I didn't do so badly for a little girl from Quincy, Illinois, eh, ducky? But it all takes money.
But why don't you get rid of all that? Live over here for a while.
Oliver, I've been in New York 4 days. The first time I've been back in 10 years. And I'm lost already. No, everything's changed. I couldn't stand it here. I'd die. I belong to the Delmonico period. A table at the window, looking out on Fifth Avenue. Boxes with flowers in. Pink lampshades. String orchestra. And I don't know, yes, willow plumes. Inverness capes. Dry champagne and snow on the ground. Say, they don't even have snow anymore.
Pardon me, Mr. Jordan.
Miss Copeland?
Mr. Eaton is outside. He wants to see you.
Oh, I'll go and see him. Will you pardon me a minute, Lotta?
He walks out. As Miss Copeland looks on, the dark-eyed Carlotta straightens her fur stole, which drips with fox heads and tails.
Oh, let me do that for you.
Miss Copeland strikes a match.
Thank you, my dear.
She lights Carlotta's cigarette.
Oh, Miss Vance, I hope you won't mind, but I can't help telling you how exciting it is seeing you right here.
Oh, how sweet.
I shall never forget it. I saw you when you played in Trelawney. Oh, you were wonderful.
That was the last thing I did.
Yes, I remember it as plainly as if it was yesterday.
Hmm.
Though I was only a little girl at the time.
How extraordinary.
Oh, it's wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
Seeing you like this.
Yes, it is. You know, we must have a nice talk about the Civil War sometime. Just you and I.
Carlotta turns away, then shoots her a look.
Well, I got rid of him.
Oh, Oliver. What do you think about me selling my Jordan stock?
Well, I'd rather you didn't. Well, just at this time. We've been hit, just as everyone has, of course. I'm afraid you wouldn't get what it was worth if you sold it now.
Oh, I'd expect to lose something on it. But you know, ladies must live.
Oh, you see, Carlotta, it's like this. The Jordan stock has never really been on the market, you know. As a matter of fact, it's very closely held. Only 6 or 7 people in all. Of course, you've got a very small block of it. Let's see. What did you pay for it anyway? Do you remember?
$61,240.
Why, Carlotta, you're marvelous.
No. I remember because it's the only stock I ever paid for myself. But then you said it was good. Yes, and it was. For nearly 20 years. The last 2 or 3 years... Oliver, you wouldn't want to buy it back yourself, would you?
Yes, I would, Carlotta.
He paces for a moment, then sits on the arm of a chair.
I find it rather difficult just now.
Why, Oliver, I always thought of you having all the money in the world.
I thought so, too, for a time.
When I think of Oliver Jordan III.
Oh, I dropped that all years ago.
Dear Oliver, you were sweet. So serious. So respectful. I was very fond of you, Oliver.
Well, I was very much in love with you, Carlotta. You were the most entrancing creature in the world. And I was at your feet. Well, so was all New York. If you went to a restaurant, it was made. If you wore a certain hat, it became the rage.
I was rather gorgeous, wasn't I?
Oh.
Remember, they named everything after me. Cigars, racehorses, perfumes, battleships. They were a little previous on that. But one thing I shall always remember. The day you were 21, you asked me to marry you, Oliver.
What a young fool you must have thought me.
No, I thought it very sweet of you. You see, I was 30-ish. Remember, I went home and wept a little. They didn't often ask me to marry them.
You broke my heart when you refused me, Carlotta. So I buried my grief in the shipping business.
Dear Oliver.
Mr. Packard is here now.
Oh, tell him to come right in.
Yes.
Do you mind, Carlotta? He's quite a fella, Dan Packard. Used to be a miner. This is big Western stuff, you know.
Oh, how interesting. Nice to meet him.
All right, Mr. Packard.
That's no elevator. That's a birdcage. Hey, Jordan, what kind of a dump is this anyway? Oh, I beg your pardon.
Dan Packard. This is Miss Carlotta Vance.
Miss Vance?
How do you do?
Wait a minute. Hmm? Not Carlotta Vance.
Yes?
Why, I know you. Jordan, you old son of a gun, you.
Yes, saw me when he was a boy. Nursie held him up so he could get a good look.
Why, your picture was on the wall of every mining shack up there in Montana, right alongside of John L. Sullivan.
Yes.
Sutton's Opera House. What was the name of that piece you were in? You wore pants.
Still do. That's my exit cue.
When'll I see you, Lotta? Soon?
Oh, Millicent called me up this morning. I'm dining to next week, Friday.
Oh, fine, of course.
You know, I'm just dying to see Paula again.
Well, I'm sure she's crazy to see you. You were so sweet to her when she was in London last year. But where are you staying?
I'm stopping at the Hotel Versailles.
Oh, the old Versailles. O'Brien.
Oh, that's it. Well, goodbye.
She blows the strapping Packard a kiss.
Lochinvar.
What did she call me?
Sit down, Dan. Sit down. How have you been?
Oh, just fine. I can only stay a minute. Running down to Washington, seems like the president wants to get down at the bottom of things.
The reason I asked you to come over, Dan, was I wanted to put something up to you.
Sure, go ahead.
It's about the Jordan Line.
Say, who put up this building? Peter Stuyvesant? Looks more like a museum than an office.
Well, it was the last word when the old gentleman built it. It's been like this for 75 years.
Well, I hope those old tubs of yours don't date for this office. Well, what do you got on your mind?
Well, you know all about our business. I don't need to go into that. Of course, this depression isn't going to last forever. But if it takes a little longer than we figure, I want to know if you and your associates would be in a position to sort of tide us over.
Hmm.
Oh, I appreciate that I'd have to turn over some of my holdings to you. I'd rather not disturb the other stockholders.
Well, I don't know anything about your business, Jordan, but it looks to me like it's gone to seed. All I have to do is look around this office. To tell you the truth, I don't think you have much to offer.
Now, look here, Packard. Our ships have traveled the ocean for a century. We started from clipper ships. We're not going to stop. We're not through.
Oh, I'm sorry, Jordan. Why, I didn't mean anything. You know, I'm a businessman and everybody's bothering you. I apologize, Jordan.
Oh, that's all right.
Now, I may be wrong. Tell you what you do. You get me some figures on this thing, the assets, the stockholders, a list of them, and the holdings, and you submit it to me, and I'll give you an answer within 24 hours.
Very kind of you.
Oliver wearily rubs his chest.
What's the matter? Got a pain?
Oh, no. It's a little indigestion.
Indigestion? Yeah. Half a lemon. I get it all the time. Yeah. Half a lemon in hot water. Well, I got to travel. I'm in a hurry.
He goes to the door.
You send me all the dope. I'll do whatever I can. So long.
As Packard leaves, Fosdick enters and shuts the door behind him. Fosdick steps over to Oliver, who leans against his desk, his brow creased.
Mr. Jordan? I wouldn't trust that man as far as I could throw a bull by the tail.
Oliver wearily turns away.
I hope you're wrong. I hope we're both wrong.
He stumbles. Fosdick helps him.
Why, what's the matter, sir?
I'm all right.
Oliver staggers to his chair, slumps into it, then holds his head. Fosdick looks on with concern. He reaches for a telephone on Jordan's desk.
Hello? Mrs. Jordan, sir.
Oliver gingerly holds the phone to his ear.
Hello, dear.
Oliver? Darling, I'm simply out of my mind. I'm still shy one couple, and I just can't find an extra man. What am I going to do, dear?
Well, you can do something for me, dear. You can invite Dan Packard and his wife.
You're joking. Ask that common little woman to my house? And that noisy, vulgar man? He smells Oklahoma.
Oh, no, they're not as bad as that. Anyway, it'd be an enormous favor to me if you did.
Of course, if it will help you, dear. Oh, Hattie, you can't imagine. Hattie just came in, dear. Maybe she can help. But do try to think of an extra man, won't you, dear?
Oliver sits with his eyes shut.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I will. I will, dear.
Goodbye. Those Packards, really.
Another dinner party?
Only a small one, darling. Otherwise, I'd love to have you and Ed. You understand?
You don't need to apologize. A cousin is a cousin.
And Ed hates functions.
Ed hates anything that keeps him from going to the movies every night. I guess I'm what's called a garbo widow.
Millicent dials her phone. Now, at a posh apartment, a uniformed maid sits smoking.
Hello. Hello. Who is it? Is this who? Jordan. Mrs. Oliver Jordan. Just a minute.
She goes into an adjacent bedroom.
Who's that on the telephone?
A Mrs. Oliver Jordan wants to speak to you on the phone.
Who?
Mrs. Jordan.
Mrs. Oliver Jordan?
Yeah.
Holy cat! Hand me that telephone, you nitwit.
The maid hands it to her mistress, who lounges in bed.
Hello, Mrs. Jordan. Of course I remember you. I've seen you at the races.
Mr. Jordan and I are giving a small dinner for Lord and Lady Ferncliff, two very dear friends of mine from England.
Gee, that sounds swell to me. Well, it's awful nice of you to ask us, Mrs. Jordan. We'll be glad to accept. Well, goodbye.
Don't you want to know the date?
Oh, sure, honey. Friday. A week from tonight. Dinner at 8. Thanks. Well, goodbye for real this time, Mrs. Jordan.
Setting down the phone, she coolly eyes the maid, then starts to buff her nails.
Tina, get my engagement book.
Tina casually glances around.
Well, it's around here somewhere.
She finds it on a nearby table beneath a towel and brings it over.
Take this down. Next Friday evening. At the Oliver Jordan's. Dinner at 8. Me eating with Lord and Lady Ferncliff. Well, you don't have to write that down, stupid.
She snatches the book.
Listen, Tina, don't crack about this to Mr. Packard. I want to spring it on him at the right time. That slug never wants to meet any refined people.
She nods to her breakfast tray.
Clear that away, Tina.
The maid shuffles to a nightstand and picks up the tray.
Hey, wait a minute.
Kitty Packard scoops ice cream from a silver cup and licks it off the spoon.
What did Dr. Talbot say? What time's he coming?
Well, he didn't say exactly. He asked, was there any symptoms? And I said, no, I didn't think so. And he said, all right, then, he'd be over sometime today.
Well, I got a cold and my legs ache all over.
Well, you didn't tell me to say that, Mrs. Packard.
Well, you should have known it.
Tina struts toward the hall with a tray. Glancing over her shoulder, she eyes her mistress, then walks out. Kitty pulls a box of chocolates from under her bed. She picks one out, takes a bite, and finds it full of cream. Grimacing, she drops it. Kitty picks up a mirror and looks at herself. Short, platinum blonde hair and a beauty mark beneath her cupid's bow lips. Grabbing a big puff, she powders her chin.
Here's your new hat.
Oh, goody.
Kitty takes a black velvet cap out of a box and tries it on, while Tina holds up the mirror.
Oh, hire, you fool.
Kitty adjusts a veil of sheer netting, then poses with a bright grin.
Don't it look cute, huh?
Swell.
Tell Oscar to pack. Just overnight stuff, that's all.
Dan Packard storms in.
You in bed again? What's the matter?
I don't feel good.
He tosses his hat and coat to a houseboy.
What's the idea of the hat? Going out? What do you eat all that sweet stuff for? Why don't you get up and do something?
You don't care what I do or how I feel.
Look at me. I was never sick a day in my life. And why? It's because I do things and get out and get to moving. Hey, Oscar, I don't want any dinner clothes. That's the reason.
Dr. Talbot says that you're an extrovert and I'm an introvert.
A what?
An introvert, you dummy. And that's why I've got to be quiet a good deal and have time to reflect in.
Reflect in? What have you got to reflect about? I have to think and act at the same time. Do you know why I'm going to Washington tonight? Because the president wants to consult me about the affairs of the nation. That's why.
What's the matter with him?
Everything's the matter with him. That's why he's sending for me. You know, I wouldn't be a bit surprised but what he offered me a cabinet job. What do you know about that?
Where'd that buffer get to?
You ought to be married to some of the guys that I see. They'd give you something to reflect about. I called on a fellow this morning who can't handle one little business, and I juggle 50 things at once, and he doesn't handle one. Here's the blow-off. He's got the layout that I've been looking for 2 years, and the sap lays it right in my lap. Little Dan Packer owns the best shipping line between here and the tropics, and Mr. Oliver Jordan is out on his ear.
We're invited there for dinner next Friday night, and I'm going to wear my new silver with the white fox.
We're not going. That's all.
How do you get that way? Why not?
Oh, I can't go and eat his dinner. If he's a sucker, that's his funeral.
No. Presidents and Washington and all those rummies. But you can't go anywheres with me. Once in our life, we get asked to a classy house, and I got a new dress that'll knock their eye out, and we're going.
We're not going.
We are so. You big crook, you pull a dirty deal, and it ruins my social chances. Well, you can't get away with it.
Oh, go lay an egg.
In an adjacent bathroom, he shaves. Back in the bed, Kitty sticks out her tongue, then pushes back the brim of her hat with a frown. After a moment, she rips off the hat, lies back under the covers, and adjusts her white silk nightgown.
Danny!
She smirks wryly, then playfully fiddles with her fingers.
Kitty wants to go see all the great big lords and ladies in a big, beautiful house.
She flicks a razz in his direction.
Danny! It's for Lord and Lady Ferncliff.
Who said so?
She did.
Well, why didn't you say so in the first place?
Because you were mean to poor little Kitty.
Ferncliff, you know who he is? He's the richest man in England.
Goody, you go?
Certainly I'll go. I've been trying to meet him for 2 years. That ties right up with the Jordan stuff.
See? And I did it for you.
You know what I'll do? I'll buy up that Jordan stock through dummies. I'll use Baldridge and Whitestone, fellows like that. Keep my name out of it.
Out of what?
What?
Tina saunters in.
Dr. Talbot's come.
Kitty sits up with big eyes.
Good. He'll take care of you, all right. Ferncliff, what a break. Goodbye, kitten. See you tomorrow.
That's fine. Goodbye.
Come on, Oscar, let's go.
He leaves.
Tina, quick, get me that other jacket, the one with the fur. Hurry up, you nitwit.
Throwing on a furry wrap, she dashes to the bathroom mirror and puts on dark lipstick.
Tina, leave me my book. You know, the fat one that Dr. Talbot gave me.
She crimps her wavy hair, then picks up an atomizer and squirts herself in the air with perfume.
It says aspects of the adult mind.
It is.
Well, leave it here. Now show the doctor in.
Kitty hops onto the bed, squeezes out a few more spurts, and sets the bottle on the nightstand. She gets back under the covers, picks up the book, and turns to a random page. Settling in, she shakes the wrap off her shoulders, exposing her bare skin. The door opens, and a dapper mustached man in a double-breasted suit enters.
Well, well, what's this?
Hello, doctor.
I just ran into your husband downstairs. He tells me he's going to see the president.
Yes, he's going to help him fix things.
Mm-hmm. Tina starts to close the door.
Well, what's wrong with the little lady?
Well, doctor, I don't know. I kind of ached all over and felt funny, and you got to be careful of the flu. And I thought maybe if I stayed in bed.
You never come and see me anymore unless I send for
you. Now, listen, Kitty, I've been very busy. You know how busy I've been.
But I'm so lonely for you, Wayne. And you know how I need you. I don't do anything all day except just long for you.
Well, why don't you try and read?
I know. You're tired of me.
No, I'm not, honey, but... Honey, you...
Oh, Wayne, darling.
She wraps her arms around his neck and kisses his lips. As he returns her embrace, they sink into the pillows. A week later, in the Jordan kitchen, a jellied lion figurine wiggles on a plate.
Look at you, quivering with pride, just because you're going to be et tonight by Lord and Lady What's-His-Name.
The cook sticks tiny British and American flags beside its paws.
Oh, the aspic!
Millicent with Hattie.
The aspic! It's too divine, Mrs. Wendell.
Thank you, ma'am.
It was the only thing I was worried about.
She moves the flags.
No, I think that's better, Mrs. Wendell.
What is it? The wreck of the Hesperus?
It's the British lion, in honor of Lord Ferncliffe. It will just make the dinner.
Oh, isn't that Aunt Emma's vegetable dish?
Yes, isn't it lovely?
As they turn away, Mrs. Wendell puts the flags back. A maid approaches Millicent, holding an envelope.
This just came, Mrs. Joan.
Thank you, Dora.
I can still remember when a telegram always meant bad news.
Oh, good heavens.
You see?
Freddie Hope, my extra man, he's got pneumonia. All of all the thoughtless, selfish, on the day of my dinner, too. Now, what am I going to do?
Why do anything? I never could understand why it has to be just even, male and female. They're invited for dinner, not for mating.
I don't know where I'm going to find someone who'll fit in with the Ferncliffs.
Nothing but a rubber plant would fit in with the Ferncliffs. How did you get an actor for Carlotta?
An actor?
A movie star. Aren't there any movie stars around?
I have got it. Larry Renault. He'd be too marvelous. I wonder if he's still in town.
He was in town yesterday. Ed, the movie hound, read me an interview with him in last night's telegram. He's leaving pictures and going into a play.
And he knows Carlotta. We met him at her place in Antibes 3 years ago. He was simply a sensation. The girls fighting to get into his car and on the beach. Well, my dear, he wore even less than the girls.
Ed says he isn't so hot since the talkies. I can't fool Ed about the pictures. He remembers John Bunny and Francis X. Bushman, Henry B. Walpole.
I don't suppose he'd even remember me. I wonder where he's stopping.
Mm. The Versailles, that's it. The Versailles, that's where he is.
That's where Carlotta's staying, are you sure?
Yes, I remember the whole interview. He was wearing a two-piece dark blue flannel lounging suit with a cunning white monogram on his upper pocket.
Let's see, I'll put him between Carlotta and the Packard woman.
See if you can get him first and let nature take its course.
Millicent picks up the phone.
Oh, I do hope he's free for tonight.
Free, white, and 45, Ed says. I'll say this for him. In his photographs, he has the most heavenly profile.
Hello, Mr. Renault, please.
Well, good luck, dear.
Hello, Mr. Renault? This is Millicent Jordan. I don't suppose you'd remember me. Auntie?
Oh, yes. Yes, of course I do. How do you do, Mrs. Jordan?
In his hotel suite, Renault turns to eye a companion. It's Paula Jordan.
Dinner? Tonight? Well, let me see. I'm afraid that possibly I can't. You see...
Paula grabs his arm and nods yes.
I have another engagement, of course, but, I might be able to break it.
Paula kisses his cheek.
And Paula, my daughter, you know, she'll be so glad to see you again. I don't suppose you'd remember her at Aunt Eve.
Of course, dear lady. Oh, it sounds like a very amusing evening. I shall certainly try to come. At 8? Thanks very much.
He hangs up.
What do you know about that?
Oh, darling, please, you must come.
I don't know. I'd feel kind of like a heel.
Oh, Larry, please. It'd be such fun to be at dinner with you in my own house.
He playfully gives her a light sock on the cheek.
And, darling, they aren't so stuffy, really.
He picks up a liquor bottle to pour a glass, but finds it empty.
They'd be crazy about you.
Oh, sure.
He wearily reclines on a sofa. She lies on top of him.
You know... And, darling, while I was dressing for dinner, I could be thinking, Larry will be here. Oh, darling, it's so awful not to be with you every minute.
She passionately kisses her dark-haired, mustached lover. As she rests her cheek against his, he nuzzles her ear.
Larry.
What?
I'm awfully jealous of the play. Are you really going to act in it?
Well, my agent's bringing Bauman up here this afternoon. I might as well sign the contract. Bauman is as good a producer as there is, I suppose.
And I'll have to sit in the audience and watch you make love to another woman. Well, I hope it flops. That's what I hope.
Oh, the play's not much, but I think I can put it over. I play the only male character.
Not another man.
Oh, there's a small male part for a bit actor. He's a beachcomber.
A beachcomber?
Yeah, he has one small scene. But I dominate that.
I love you so.
Paula slips on her shoes. Larry rises and straightens his smoking jacket.
May I use your comb?
As she steps into the next room, he opens the door to a bellboy.
Where have you been all this time?
Came as quick as I could.
Hey, wait a minute. Where's my change?
I had to go to a new place. Cost $50 more.
Who told you to go to a...
The boy hands him a bottle of liquor and leaves. Larry stares after him for a moment, then closes the door. He breaks the bottle's seal and reaches for his glass. Paula returns, clutching a lit cigarette.
Well, a little drink.
Any reason why I shouldn't?
No, of course not. Except at Mother's tonight. I want them to see you at your best. Hmm. Larry, don't.
Oh, Paula, mind your own business, will you?
Don't talk to me like that.
I'll do as I please.
He downs his drink and slumps onto the sofa. She paces for a moment, then stops beside him and lays her hand on his shoulder.
Darling. Darling, let's not quarrel.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm kind of on edge today. Deciding about this play and everything.
It's my fault. I'm a little jumpy myself. Ernest gets back from abroad this evening.
Ernest? Will he be there at your mother's?
Poor Ernest. I'm awfully sorry for him. He's so sweet. I can't understand yet what's happened. Less than a month ago, I thought I was in love with him. And you were one of those million-dollar movie stars.
Now listen, Paula. I want to tell you something.
I know, I know. Ernest is just the sort of young man I should marry. And you're the sort that girls are always warned against. Well, I don't give a hoot what people say. I know all the things you've done. I know how many times you've been married.
But I'm still married.
I don't care. I'm sick of hiding my love for you. I'm sick of scheming and pretending. Do you think I can go on with Ernest? After all we've been to each other.
You don't know anything about me. You've known me a month.
Larry, how can you? A month. As though time were important.
It is important. There are other things important. You're a kid of 19. You're 19 and I'm 47. I'm almost 40.
You'll be telling me next time I'm not old enough to know the facts of life.
You don't. Not the real facts. You can't. Everything's been too easy for you. You don't know what it means to be up against it. Keep fighting them every second. To pull yourself up, hand over hand, while they're waiting with a knife to cut the rope.
He gulps another drink.
Well, I'm not through yet. I'll show them. If they think I'm finished.
Larry makes sense. What's that got to do with our love?
Love. Love.
He turns and looks into her eyes.
You want to know the truth, Paula? I love you. As much as I can love any woman. But it isn't real love anymore. There have been too many. I've been in love 100 times. I've had 3 wives. Do you want to know about them?
No.
She drops into a chair.
Well, there was Violet. He was a vaudeville hoofer. Rooming houses. Dirty kimonos. Fried egg sandwiches. We fought like wildcats. Then I broke into pictures and I left her. Then I married Edith. She was crazy about my profile. Always kept talking about it. She was society. Well, we were happy for about 6 months. Then Hollywood dazzled her. Well, you know what happened. Out in our car one night, drunk as the devil, over the cliff.
Were you in love with her?
As for Marcel, well, you know about her. She's the top of the heap now. Biggest draw of any woman in pictures. Ambitious. I've never known any woman like her. She'd do anything to get along. And knife me to get there. Always telling me someday she'd be bigger than I was. And now I'm...
With his mouth agape, Larry blinks hard, then stares into space. Dark circles rim his eyes. He rubs his cleft chin and grabs his empty glass.
Well, there they are, the three of them. I won't tell you about the others. They swarmed on me. Every age, kind, and description.
Holding the glass in one hand and the bottle in the other, he sits.
What do you want with me?
Paula rises from her chair, goes over to the sofa, and stands beside him.
I love you.
He takes her smooth hand and presses it to his cheek.
You're young and fresh. And I'm burned out. Paula? This is the first decent thing I ever did in my life. You listen to what I'm telling you.
I won't listen. I love you. It's no use, Larry. Nothing you can say will make any difference. I'm going to tell Mother and Dad in earnest. And I'm going to tell them tonight.
I tell you, you're not. That's Mac, my agent.
She picks up her coat.
Paula, I want you to promise me.
No.
Oh, for the love of heaven, Paula.
It's no use, Larry. My mind's made up.
She starts to put on a hat over her curly, light brown hair. He answers the door.
Don't you ever get up.
A man in a light suit enters and spots Paula.
Oh.
His gaze shifts from her to Larry, then back again.
You know my agent, Mr. Kane? Miss Jordan.
Sure. How's the little lady?
Splendid, thank you. And you?
Top of the bottle. Am I buttoned in?
Not at all. I was just going. Goodbye.
Pearls in your oysters.
Paula. Please think of what I've said.
In the hall, an elevator door opens and Carlotta steps out with 4 Pekingese dogs.
Oh, dear.
Goodbye, Larry.
Goodbye. Paula.
I must, Larry.
Carlotta watches unseen as Paula walks off. Carlotta shakes her head, then gazes at the floor. Spotting something, she frowns and picks up one of the dogs by the scruff of its neck.
Now, aren't you ashamed? For 15 minutes, I walk you around the block so you... And then you come right in the ear.
Muzzy's sorry. She doesn't give a darn for the old man's carpet. No, Gany. I'm off aside, Gany.
Inside, Kane picks over a breakfast table as Larry returns.
Well, how's the great profile today? You been out or just sticking around here?
No, I didn't feel very well. I slept rather late. I'm going out to dinner.
Say, why don't you go up to McDermott's and get a workout every day? Get yourself in shape. What is it, cinnamon toast?
Oh, I'll be all right. As soon as I get into rehearsal, I'll get into shape.
Sure, just keep on with that. That'll fix you up.
Kane watches Larry down another drink.
Well, did you see Bauman? I thought perhaps he'd come up here with you.
Oh, Bauman? No, he didn't come up.
Did he give you the contract?
Well, look, Larry. I got some disappointing news for you, kinda.
What's the matter?
Well, you know how these managers are. This way, that way, you never know when you got them. Well,
for the love of... Come out with it.
Well, I'm telling you. I go in to see Bauman this afternoon. He's sitting there, a face down to here. I start in talking about the play. What does he do? He tells me he's got to go south for a month. He's sick.
What does that mean?
Well, there you are. He's got to go south. You can't do a play when you're south.
But he's got to do it. It was all settled.
Well, it was talked over, but it wasn't really yet.
He pretends to write a signature.
You know, unless you get it down on that old black and white, that even then sometimes it's no good.
Oh, well, take it away from him. There are the producers. A cheap crook.
Sure. Bauman's no good. That's how he got where he is. But that's not the point. What does he do? He goes and he turns the play over to this Joe Stengel.
Stengel. Stengel, eh? I rather like the idea of going with Stengel. They tell me he does those highbrow plays. Ibsen.
He dramatically wipes his brow.
I want the moon, Mother.
Yeah. Now, look,
Larry. He understands I'm to be starred, of course.
Well, then that's just it.
Huh?
Now, look, Larry, don't blame me. I've been plugging for you for months.
What are you trying to tell me?
Now, don't go up in the air about it. There's sure to be something else.
You mean I'm out? You dirty double-crosser, do you mean I'm out?
Larry, I'm telling you, nobody knew about this. Nobody.
Who's gonna play the part?
This, Cecil Bellamy.
That piffling little... Why, he's English in the first place.
Well, the part says English explorer.
I can be English. English as anybody. I've been waiting 6 weeks for this play. I could have had a million things. Personal appearances, radio, vaudeville.
Sure you could. You can get them yet. But the thing for you is a part in a play. You know, get back in that old public eye.
Yes, but where's the vehicle?
Well, I was thinking about this play again. And you know, Larry, I never said anything, but I never thought that part was so hot for you. You know the part that I'd be crazy to play if I was an actor?
What?
That beachcomber.
Beachcomber? You're asking me to go on and play a part that isn't... Get out of here. Go on. Get out. Get out!
Now, Larry, don't make a mistake.
Get out. Before I kick you out.
They stand nose to nose for a moment, then Kane shrugs and starts to turn away.
How about your own way?
He picks up his trench coat and slings it over his arm. The tall, clean-shaven agent opens the door and steps into the hallway.
Wait a minute.
Kane turns back and locks onto Larry's gaze.
Close the door.
He re-enters the suite, shutting the door behind him. Eyeing Renault carefully, he comes up beside him.
What makes you think this part isn't right for me?
It's no good. They're going to get tired of him. Now, this beachcomber, he comes on once. Swell scene. He goes off. They keep waiting for him to come back. And he never does. What a part.
Yeah, one scene is very nice.
It's a pushover. You know what's going to happen? When that final curtain hits the floor and this, what's his name? This Bellamy. When he comes out to take his bows, they're all going to be yelling, Renault, Renault.
You think so?
It's a pushover. Now, I'll tell you what. I'm going down to see Stengel right away. He's a friend of mine.
Wait a minute. But don't let on you talk to me about this. Just tell him maybe you can get me to play it, see?
Huh, leave it to me. I might be able to get Stengel to drop up here for a minute as a favor to me. You know, I used to be Joe's office boy. How long are you going to be here?
Oh, a long while. I'm not dining till 8.
Well, if I can get him to come up, I'm good. Well, goodbye.
Oh, Mac.
Huh?
Here's a funny thing. I wonder if you could let me have $5. Taxi fare. I didn't get down to the bank. I'm going to this dinner tonight. And what do you suppose I got? 7 cents.
Imagine that. Well, look, I just got enough to get out of the office myself, but I'll bring it to you when I come back.
They exchange a nod and Kane leaves. Mouth agape, Larry closes the door. He jiggles his change in his palm and weaves over to a dresser. He has an aquiline nose, prominent cheekbones, and slicked back hair, streaked with gray. He dumps the coins on the dresser top.
Thanks.
A waiter enters.
Can I take the table now?
Oh, wait a minute. It's just occurred to me I haven't had anything to eat since breakfast. I'm not dining until 8. Huge. Bring me up a cup of coffee, good and strong. And I think I'll take a caviar sandwich.
Yes, sir.
Well, that's all.
I'm very sorry, Mr. Renault, but were you going to sign for it?
Why?
Excuse me, please, but my orders are that if you sign for it, I cannot serve any more food here.
What? Not sir. Get that order up here, once. I'll speak to the manager.
He grabs the phone as the waiter exits. Hello. With the table.
Hello? Hello?
Larry puts the receiver back in its cradle.
Hello? No, I didn't call.
He starts to hang up.
Oh, hello. Wait a minute. Yes, I did. Send up a bellboy. To go on an errand. To send up Eddie.
Eddie!
The one who always goes out for me.
He hangs up the phone and sets it on a coffee table. With a wild gleam in his eye, he undoes both of his cufflinks and wrenches them out of his shirt sleeves. With his hair hanging in his face and his brow furrowed, he scowls for a moment, then lifts his jacket, exposing his belt. Larry rips off the buckle and holds it in his hand with the cufflinks. Glancing around, he spots something across the room and lurches over. At a small table, he picks up a smiling photo of Paula and yanks it out of its silver frame. After propping the photo against a lamp, Larry opens a newspaper, then puts the frame, cufflinks, and buckle on top and wraps everything up. Now, in a doctor's exam room, a nurse in a white uniform and cap picks up a file that reads, Mr. Oliver Jordan. She takes it into a large wood-paneled office and places it on a desk. Dr. Wayne Talbot enters, carrying a medical bag. He puts it down, removes his hat and coat, and hands them to the nurse.
There's 6 in the waiting room. Mr. Jordan telephoned. He wants to know if you'll see him.
Oh, I suppose so.
Did you see Mrs. Talbot as you came through? She wanted to talk to you.
No, I didn't.
Dr. Talbot's office. Who is it, please? Well, who is it? I'm sorry, but I'll have to have the name. Oh, yes, Mrs. Packard. He's in. Just a minute.
She steps into Talbot's exam room.
Oh, doctor. Mrs. Packard's on your private wire.
Well, all right.
He sets a dropper and slide into a container, wipes his hands on a towel, and goes back into the office area. Stepping up to his mahogany desk, Talbot picks up the phone.
Hello. Yes. Yes.
The nurse leaves and closes two sliding doors behind her.
Now, Kitty. Kitty, will you listen a minute? No, I can't come over. These are my office hours, you know that. There's nothing the matter with you. I've been busy. I'll see you tonight at the Jordan. Of course you can go.
A brunette woman opens a door behind him and enters, eyeing him slyly.
I think you're very sweet. No, no, of course there's no other woman. Hey, Kitty, you're driving me... Yes, I think you better sleep for an hour and rest, and then take a mild bromide. Well, my office is full of patients now. You must excuse me. Oh, no, there's no cause for alarm. Yes, thank you. Goodbye.
He turns.
Hello, Lucy.
Hello, Wayne.
How are you, dear?
I'm fine, and you?
I'm all right.
Anything new?
No. No?
Just, same old thing, hmm?
What?
I mean unreasonable women patients.
Oh, yes. Oh, she's not really sick. You know, a woman with a lot of time on the hand. I prescribed a sedative, but she doesn't really need anything.
How about an apple a day?
What's that?
Don't bother.
What?
Don't bother because I know all about it.
What are you talking about?
Oh, Wayne, dear. I'm not going to make a scene. You know I never do I? Remember how nicely I behaved about the others? Mrs. Whiting, that Dalrymple girl, and the Ferguson woman, Dolly, and... Where are your files?
You're quite wrong.
Abby, I knew just when it started. Now she's at the insistence stage.
Scowling, he lights a cigarette.
It's all just a great bore, isn't it, darling?
Her eyes stare soberly straight ahead.
Don't think I don't mind. But I can't let it tear me to pieces the way it did the first time. It was just before Wayne was born, remember? I thought the world had come to an end. The noble young physician was just a masher.
Surely a little more than that.
A great deal more. That's why it's so pathetic. You're two people, really. One's magnificent. And the other's so shoddy.
You're right, Lucy. I don't know why you've stayed with me all these years.
Because I'm still in love with you. Isn't that funny? Think I have more pride.
He takes her hand.
I love you, Lucy. It's never been otherwise.
You know what I think? I think you're still a little boy living over on 10th Avenue. A little bit in awe of the girl from Murray Hill. And that's why, forgive me, these glamorous women in your life have all been a little common. A little bit 10th Avenue, too.
These other women, well, it's like gambling or drinking or drugs. You just keep on.
A habit can be cured if the patient wants to.
The patient wants to.
Of course, you mustn't stop too suddenly.
She slowly pulls away. He stands beside her.
Lucy, darling, it's you and I. It's always been you and I. It always will be. Now you must believe that.
Lucy comes closer and they kiss. He wraps his arms around her slender body. As she releases him, he gently pats her back. Suddenly, the nurse bursts in.
Doctor! Oh, I'm sorry. Mr. Oliver Jordan's here, and he seems very ill.
Well, have him come right in.
I'll see you later, dear.
All right, then.
He follows the nurse.
You're all right now, Mr. Jordan.
Why, what's this, Oliver? Here, come right over here and sit down.
As a weak-kneed Oliver Jordan staggers in, they take his arms and help him to a chair.
There you are now. That's it. It's right here. Nitrate of ammo, quick.
Wayne unbuttons Oliver's vest. The nurse brings over a large capsule. The doctor breaks it open and holds it under Jordan's nose.
Here, sniff this.
Breathing in, Oliver rests his head against the seat back while the nurse strokes his forehead.
There, that's better.
Oh, I'm all right now.
Talbot fits a stethoscope into his ears while the nurse unbuttons Oliver's shirt. Bending over, Talbot places the stethoscope on Jordan's exposed chest. He listens intently as the nurse continues to stroke Oliver's forehead. Standing up, Wayne removes the stethoscope, his brow creased with worry. He exchanges a look with a nurse who steps away. Then he leans on his desk.
How long has this been going on? Have you ever had it before?
No, not exactly like this.
Oh, well, it's probably indigestion. What did you have for lunch?
I didn't have much of anything.
I'd like you to come in tomorrow for a more thorough examination.
All right. 2:15?
I'll be at the hospital till 4. You better make it 4:15.
Oh.
Wayne scribbles on a prescription pad.
Hey. Well, I feel great. I may fool you and not come at all tomorrow.
You show up here. Broken appointments are charged double.
I never pay him anyhow.
What are you doing tonight, Oliver?
Well, you're dining with us.
Oh, that's right.
Among others. Right.
Well, listen, couldn't you arrange to sneak away and go to bed early?
We're going to the theater.
Now, you avoid any excitement. And stop worrying about business.
Old pump out of order?
No. It's a bit worried. Just a little tired, that's all.
Oh, I see.
Well, see you later, hmm?
Yeah.
Dinner at 8?
I believe so.
Goodbye, Oliver.
Goodbye, Doctor. Thank you very much.
All right.
With his shirt and vest rebuttoned, Oliver steps to the door.
You're not fooling me.
He smiles wryly and leaves. With a concerned frown, Wayne sits back on his desk. The nurse returns, holding a file.
How bad is it?
Coronary artery. Thrombosis.
How long will he live?
A few years. Months. Days, even.
Are you sure?
Positive. You can tell it like that.
Poor fellow.
Wayne solemnly stands.
Yeah.
He sits in his desk chair, then takes out a cigarette. The nurse places the file before him.
Ready?
All right.
She opens the door to a waiting room.
All right, Mrs. Beveridge.
At the Jordans, Millicent fusses with a vase of flowers. Mrs. Wendell approaches, holding her hand to her mouth.
Excuse me, ma'am.
Yes, Mrs. Wendell? Why, what's the matter with your face?
Oh, it's that old tooth again.
What seems to be wrong?
It's the aspic for the dinner tonight.
The aspic?
I had to drop it on the floor.
You had to drop the aspic on the floor?
Yes, ma'am. You see, the butler and the chauffeur were fighting, and I had to get between them.
Ricky? And Gustav fighting? Well, what about?
Dora.
Behind them, Dora. The maid shamefully turns away.
What do they mean by fighting in the kitchen?
I don't know, ma'am. But we can't use the aspic for dinner tonight.
Well, of course not, if you dropped it on the floor. No. 5 o'clock. This is terrible. I particularly wanted the aspic. It's so dressy. Send for some crab meat. You can cook it Newburg.
Yes, ma'am.
Send Ricky for it at once.
But I can't send Ricky, ma'am.
Why not?
Well, you see, he's been arrested. He's in jail.
Excuse me, madam. In jail? For what?
For stabbing Gustav.
Excuse me, madam. Miss Carlotta Vance is calling. Tell her I'm not here. Where is Gustav?
Well,
You see, they took him to the hospital. The doctor's showing up his eye.
Millicent! Woo!
Oh, where dear, are oh, dear. You?
In here, Carlotta.
Will that be about all, ma'am?
I hope so.
Thank you, ma'am.
Millicent! Ducky! I never was so glad to see anyone in all my life, my dear.
Dear Carlotta.
Oh, you don't mind me rushing in on you like this, do you? I just popped in to see Oliver.
Oh, really? How nice. I'm afraid.
No, I'll wait. Anything to get out of those streets.
Oh,
may I have a whiskey and soda? You don't mind, do you? Millicent, really, I'm just dying.
Oh, why, of course.
Oh, my. I'm absolutely cracked up. Yeah, simply depleted. I've been in every office building, from the Battery to the Bronx. Say, Millicent, you don't mind if I take my shoes off, do you?
Ooh, what a relief.
She removes them and rubs her toes.
Oh, my.
No. Please do.
Thank you. It's that big toes. What a city. I left the hotel at 11 this morning. A young and lovely girl. Now look at me. I took on 10 years trying to get from the Versailles to Times Square. And then I had a restful, nice luncheon with four lawyers. On the 88th floor of the Watts's building. You know, the Sky Club. A cloud floated right into my soup plate.
Yes, it's terrible, but we get used to it.
Oh, dear. The minute I see Oliver, I'm going to go back to my hotel and pop myself into bed, and I'm not going to get up until tomorrow at noon. Thank goodness I don't have to go to one of those dreadful dinners tonight.
But you're dining here.
Oh, how enchanting. Of course. The Ferncliffs. Oh, well, that means a nice little cozy game of bridge. I can always keep awake for that.
But we are going to the theater.
Oh, now, won't that be delightful? Yes, I always like to see a new play. What are we going to see?
We're going to see Say It With Music.
Oh, yeah, that'll be enchanting, yes. Yes, I thought it was so amusing.
You've seen it?
Yes, two or three times. But that's nothing. Oh, no, I'm used to that. Funny man. With a cigar.
She makes a face behind her hat. Dora enters with a tray.
Shall I mix it for you, madame?
Oh, thank you very much, my dear. Yes, that'd be very nice of you.
Carlotta watches Dora pour whiskey into a glass more than halfway.
Now, that's enough. That's enough. How complicated life is. Well,
Dora starts to add soda.
Oh, my dear, wait a minute. I'm spoiled.
The maid puts the soda bottle back on the tray and leaves. Carlotta gulps down her entire glass.
Well,
Oliver steps through the front door and strolls past the drawing room.
Oliver?
Oh, Oliver, Ducky!
Hello, Carlotta.
Oliver shakes Carlotta's hand and hugs his wife.
Carlotta wants to talk to you.
Oh, I'll not keep you a minute, Oliver.
I've got to get a new butler for tonight. Oh, I do hope the agency will send me one who doesn't drop things.
Optimist?
If it's not asking too much.
As she leaves, Oliver sits beside Carlotta.
I tried to get you. Oliver, sweet. You won't be cross with Carlotta, will you? You see, I told the man that I wanted to ask you first, but he said, no, it must be done today, you know, a meeting or something. Then I couldn't reach you at your office, and I went ahead. Then I sort of got worried about it.
Carlotta, what are you trying to tell me?
Well, you see, Oliver, sweet, you know, Carlotta's so broke, and it was such a chance, and I sold my Jordan stock. I hope you won't mind. That's what I came here to tell you.
Who'd you sell it to?
Oh, a most charming man. My, he had such nice manners. You see, his name is, James K. Baldridge.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I hope you don't mind.
No, it's all right.
Well, Oliver, I did try to reach you, Oliver.
He rises and walks out. She follows with her shoes back on. In the foyer, Oliver takes out a card and dials a number.
You know, you said you didn't want to buy it back yourself, and along came that nice Mr. Bainbridge with all that beautiful money.
See, it's certified.
Hello, Mr. Kingsbury. Oliver Jordan speaking.
Oh, you are cross. Oh, I'm just devastated. I wouldn't have done it for anything in the world. I'd rather go barefoot and hungry than...
Kingsbury? Sorry to disturb you at home. Have the Satterley sisters sold their Jordan stock? Well, you sold it this afternoon. Would you mind telling me who bought it? Baldridge. Thank you very much.
Well, I guess I'll be trotting along. I'll see you at dinner. Say goodbye to Millicent for me, won't you?
No, I'll see you to the door, Paula.
As they walk off, arm in arm, Millicent rushes down a flight of stairs. She peeks into the drawing room, finds it empty, and answers the foyer phone.
Hello? Yes, this is Mrs. Jordan. Oh, Lord Ferncliff's secretary? Yes? Yes?
She blanches. Her smile fades.
What's that? But you must be mistaken. But they can't. They can't go to Florida. They are coming here to dinner. I'm giving the dinner for them. They've gone. When? But people don't do such things. I don't care how sudden it was. You should have let me...
Paula enters.
Well, all I can say is I never heard of such a thing in all my life before. Never. Oh,
Mother. Mother, I want to talk to you.
What?
It's about Ernest and me. I want to talk to you about
Ernest. Mother, don't bother me now. For pity's sake, don't bother me now. I can't listen to your arsenal.
But, Mother, you don't understand. This is terrible.
Shut up. Shut up, I tell you. Let me think.
Oliver returns.
Millicent, darling, would you mind awfully if I didn't go to the theater tonight? I'm feeling pretty rotten. If I could just go to bed...
What's that you're saying?
I say I'm feeling pretty rotten. I'm up against a business thing.
Oh, business thing. At a time like this, you talk to me about a business thing and feeling rotten. This is a nice time to say you're feeling rotten. You come to me with your... And you whimpering about Ernest. Some little lovers quarrel. I'm expected to listen to Ernest and business and headaches when I'm half out of my mind. Do you know what's happened to me? I've had the most ghastly day anybody ever had. No aspic for dinner. And Ricky in jail and Gustav dying for all I know. And a new butler tonight and that dance woman coming in and having to send for crab meat. Crab meat. And now, on top of everything else, the Ferncliffs aren't coming to dinner. They call up at this hour, the miserable Cockneys. They call up to say they've gone to Florida. Florida! And who can I get at this hour? Nobody! I've got 8 people for dinner. 8 people isn't a dinner. Who can I get? And you come to me with your idiotic little... I'm the one who ought to be in bed. I'm the one who's in trouble. You don't know what trouble is, either of you.
As she marches off, they stare after her. At the Packards, Kitty applies makeup at a vanity table. Behind her, Dan steps out of the bathroom, combing his wet hair.
In the meadow and the bird. Are you coming, kitten?
She keeps her back to him.
Are you coming, kitten?
I've told you a million times not to talk to me when I'm doing my lashes.
And don't you talk to me when I'm shaving.
Tina enters with a spray of white orchids.
I think these are the handsomest ones you ever bought.
Will you take those back? I'll tell you when I want them.
Yes, ma'am.
Put them in the icebox, nitwit.
Packard pulls on a dress shirt.
Well... Tomorrow, Oliver Jordan can go and buy himself a little rowboat and start all over again. He'll never know who done it.
Yeah, you're so smart, you're going to land in jail someday. Tina, where are my slippers?
I'm just beginning, Tootsie. I'm just beginning. Whose wife's got any bigger braces than you've got, huh? Remember what I told you last week?
No, I don't remember what you told me a minute ago.
About Washington? Don't you remember that? How'd you like to be a cabinet member's wife? Mingle with all the other cabinet members' wives and ambassadors.
Nerd, you're not going to drag me down to that graveyard. I've seen their pictures in the papers, those girlies. A lot of sour-faced fronts with last year's clothes on. Pinning medals on Girl Scouts and pouring tea for the DARs. And rolling Easter eggs on the White House lawn. A swell lot of fun I'd have. You go live in Washington. I can have a good time right here.
Listen, stupid. If I get that appointment to Washington, I'm going. And if I go, you go. That's that.
You mean you're really going to get it?
Certainly I am.
I won't go.
You will go.
Oh, no, I won't. You can't boss me. I can yell just as loud as you can.
You've been acting very strangely lately, my fine lady, and I'm not going to stand for it.
Yeah, and so what?
So what? I'm the works around here, and I'll give you orders what to do.
Who do you think you're talking to? That first wife of yours out in Montana?
Now you leave her
that
out of
poor,
this.
Poor mealy-faced thing with a flat chest that didn't have nerve enough to talk up.
Shut up.
Washing out your greasy overalls and cooking and slaving in some lousy mining shack. Now when does she die?
Say, I'll sock
well,
you in a minute.
You can't get me that way. You're not going to step on my face to get where you want to go, you big windbag.
Listen, you little piece of scum, you. I've got a good notion to drop you right back where I picked you up in the check room of the Hottentot Club or wherever the dirty joint was.
Oh, no, you won't.
And then you can go back to that sweet-smelling family of yours, back of the railroad tracks in Passaic, and get this. If that sniveling, money-grubbing, whining old mother of yours comes fooling around my offices anymore, I'm going to give orders to have her thrown down those 60 flights of stairs. So help me.
Tina brings in an evening bag. Dan grabs it. She leaves as he hurls it to the floor.
You picked that up.
Pick it up yourself.
You picked that up.
He kicks it across the room. Kitty snatches a piece of jewelry from her vanity.
Bracelets, eh?
She flings it to the floor and kicks it away. Packard puffs out his barrel chest.
After I pick you out of the gutter, this is the thanks that I get. Thank you.
Thanks for what? Listening to you blowing about what a big guy you just been or you're gonna be? Listen, you never sent me a flower in your life. When I want flowers, I gotta go buy them. What woman wants to buy themselves flowers? You never sit and talk to me or ask me what I've been doing or how I am or anything.
Well, why don't you go out and get something to do? I ain't stopping you.
You bet you ain't. You think I sit home all day looking at bracelets? Ha! Of all the dumb bunnies. What do you think I'm doing while you're out pulling your dirty deals? Waiting for Daddy to come home?
What are you driving at,
you little... You think you're the only man I know, you great big noise? Well, you aren't, see? There's somebody that just knowing him has made me realize what a stuffed shirt you are.
Why, you...
You don't like that, do you, Mr. Cabinet Member? Somebody else put over a deal.
You mean to tell me that you've been putting it over on me with some other man?
Yes, and what are you gonna do about it, you big gas bag?
Kid, you tell me who it is or I'll break every bone in your body.
I won't, kill me and I won't.
He throws her onto the bed.
I'll find out who it is. Tini!
She don't know.
Tini!
She don't know.
Kitty leaps up and joins Dan at the door. Tina slowly opens it and timidly enters the room.
Who's been coming to this house?
Huh? You don't know, do you?
You shut your trap! Who's been coming to this house?
I ain't seen nobody.
Oh, yes, you have. You tell me who's been coming to the house. Who came here while I was in Washington?
Nobody. Only the doctor.
No, I don't mean him. Who's been coming here behind my back?
I ain't seen a soul.
Oh, get up, dummy.
Huh. What did I tell you?
I'll divorce you. That's what I'll do. I'll divorce you. You won't get 1 cent. There's a law for what you've done.
Yeah, you gotta prove it, Faith.
Yeah? I'll track him down. I'll find him. I'll kill him. That's what I'll do. Then I'll throw you out just like you were an alley cat.
Yeah? So you want to go to Washington? You want to tell the president where to get off? You want to go into politics? Well, I know about politics, and I know all about the crooked deals you bragged about, stealing from Brown, and that Thompson business, and jipping old man Clark, and now this Jordan thing. When I tell about those, it'll raise a pretty stink. Politics? You couldn't get into politics. You couldn't get in anywhere. You couldn't even get in the men's room at the Astor.
Why, you poisonous little rattlesnake, you. Listen, I've got to go to this Ferncliff dinner tonight. Ferncliff means more to me than you do. I'm clearing out of here after tonight. You can sit here and get flowers from your soulmate. We're through.
Oh, no, you ain't. Now, you're gonna listen to me while I run off at the mouth. You're gonna let that Jordan stock stay right where it is. Because if you don't, I'll broadcast the whole rotten deal. And if I open my trap, they can hear me clean back in Montana.
It's the first chance I ever got with decent society people. To see my name in the paper with somebody that ain't mixed in your dirty politics. And if I miss it, you're gonna pay for it with everything you got.
So you'd make a sucker out of me, huh?
Well, I certainly ain't trying to make a gentleman out of you. But I'm gonna be a lady if it kills me.
Why, you dirty little...
Don't say it.
So-and-so.
He marches out in a huff.
Tina. Yes, ma'am. Pick that bracelet up. It fell.
Oh. Tina bends down and scoops it up.
That's pretty, ain't it?
Give it to me.
Look, it just fits me.
She drapes it around her forearm.
Give it here, will you?
You got so many bracelets, I don't see how you can use them all.
What are you driving at?
Nothing. Only I thought with you having so many, maybe you might want to give me one.
Tina's eyes bore into Kitty. Seated at the vanity, her mistress stares up at her. After a long, tense moment, Kitty slowly lowers her gaze, turns to the mirror, and begins to apply lipstick. Now, at the Versailles, Larry drunkenly weaves into the sitting room of his suite, attired in a top hat, white tie, and tails. He grabs a bottle of liquor by the neck and starts to pour. Nothing comes out. He sets it down, then saunters to a mirror, swaying slightly. As he studies his reflection, he straightens his smartly tailored coat, smooths his pencil-thin mustache, and adjusts his bow tie.
Come in.
Mac Kane enters.
Where have you been? You know I was waiting here, you silly.
Larry, I brought up Mr. Stengel. This is Larry Renault, Mr. Stengel. Larry, this is Joe Stengel.
How do you do, Mr. Stengel?
Mr. Renault?
Well, this is quite an occasion. The meeting of two celebrities. We should have the newsreel men here.
Yes. Of course, I didn't realize it was a full-dress affair. I just came as I was. Well, Mr. Renault has got a dinner date with some of his Park Avenue friends. You know, these big picture boys, they're pretty social. Yes.
Kane hides Larry's bottle under his coat.
I haven't got an awful lot of time. Yeah, Larry, suppose we get down to brass tacks, huh?
All right, my dear fellow. Well, Stengel, you're going to produce this play, eh? And you want me to act in it. Well, I...
Larry, this is just getting acquainted. You know, he's just crazy to play the part.
Just a minute. Let's get this thing straight. I understand from Mr. Kane here that you wanted to know if I'd be willing to portray the beachcomber in this thing.
Wait a minute. Not so fast there. Now, Larry...
In the first place, if I consent to play this part, and I don't say I will, it'll have to be built up.
Built up? The fellow's got one scene, and to find him dead on the beach. This isn't a play about spiritualism.
Don't forget, I'm Larry Renault.
Larry, for heaven's sake.
Shut up. Now listen, Stengel, I'm a name, and I know it. And so do you. And I'm not going on and play second fiddle to any cheap English hand.
Now, Larry.
8,000 a week, that's what I got. And I was going to get 10 till the talkies came in. So don't think you're doing me a favor by asking me to play in your ratty little show, because I'm doing you one.
I think maybe we're keeping you from your dinner, Mr. Renault. Joe, he doesn't mean...
Yes, I do. And just because it's Mr. Joe Stengel that don't mean a thing to me, I'm still good, better than I ever was.
Good night, Mr. Renault.
Now, listen to me, old-timer. I'm drunk, and I know I'm drunk. But I know what I'm talking about.
For heaven's sake, Mr. Stengel.
It's all right, Mac. I'll see you tomorrow.
I wouldn't be on your rotten show, not Larry Renault. You know why? Because I'm an important artist, and you're nothing but a cheap pushcart producer. Pushcart!
Stengel leaves, pursued by Kane. Larry stands in the open doorway, staring after them. His gaze falls to the floor, his shoulders slump. Looking up, he sticks out his chest and saunters to the mantel. With a flick of his finger, he smooths his mustache again, then straightens his tie. Kane strides back in.
You cock-eyed, drunken fool. I bring him up here. I go down on my hands and knees to do it. And you...
As Larry scowls, Kane raises both of his hands, then stops and lowers them.
Well, that's that.
He picks up his coat, flings it over his arm, and heads for the door.
Hey, wait a minute. I got something to say to you, too. Telling him I was crazy to play the part. You got this play away from Bauman, and you gave it a Stengel, you double-dealing chiseler. I've been suspicious of you all along. You're in with the managers. You've been taking my money and working for them.
You don't say. I'm working for the managers, huh? Taking your money. Me. Me that you're into for 500 smackers and touches. You think I've been lying to you all the time? All right. You're gonna get the truth now. Renault, you're through.
Get out.
I'll get out. And I'll stay out. But get this first. I never worked so hard in my life to put anybody over as I did you. You think I told you all the things that I tried? No, because I couldn't come to you and tell you what they said. I felt too sorry for you.
You were sorry for me?
Vaudeville. Every time I walked into a booking office, they leaned back and they roared. They called me Mac, the grave snatcher. Last night, I sent another telegram to the coast. I knew it was no use. But I sent it anyway. You want to see the answer?
He takes it out.
No. No.
Thank you. When we were in the market for bit players, we will let you know.
You're trying to throw a scare into me.
Oh, no. I'm just telling you the truth.
He drops the telegram.
You know, you never were an actor. You did have looks, but they're gone now. You don't have to take my word for it. Just look in any mirror. They don't lie. Take a good look.
He turns to the mirror.
Look at those pouches under your eyes. Look at those creases. You sag like an old woman. Get a load of yourself.
Larry stands still with his head bowed.
Will you start tramping around to the offices looking for a job? Because you know no agent's going to handle you. Sitting in those ante rooms, hour after hour, giving your name to office boys that never even heard of you. You're through, Renault. You're through in pictures and plays and vaudeville and radio and everything. You're a corpse and you don't know it. Go get yourself buried.
Larry raises his eyes and scowls at Kane. Hat and coat in hand, the agent turns away. He walks out. Larry gazes after him, then steps closer to the mirror. Swaying, he struggles to keep his eyes open. As he regards his reflection, his back suddenly straightens and his eyes grow wide. Shadows fall across his face. He slumps onto a dresser, knocking over a porcelain urn. His eyes flutter for a moment. Lifting his head, Larry spots something on the floor. He lurches toward the discarded telegram, bangs into a chair, then trips over his feet and falls. Larry leans against an ottoman and picks up the telegram. He tries to focus on it, then gives up. The bellboy barges in with Larry's package.
I don't want that junk. They wouldn't give me nothing on it.
Why, it's a silver frame. A buckle solid gold.
All right, you take them. I lugged them to have a pawn shop on 6th Avenue.
Hi, you little liar. I bet you never took them any.
Say, who are you calling a liar? You down and out ham?
Oh, you filthy little rat. How dare you talk to me like that?
Okay.
Wait a minute. I didn't mean that. I'm sorry. Listen, I gotta have some liquor. I'm sick. Lay it out for me like a good kid. I'll pay you back.
Say, what kind of a sucker do you think I am?
I gotta have it. I gotta. I'll pay you back. I'll pay you back tomorrow.
Ah, baloney.
He leaves. Larry frowns in dismay. With his hair falling across his forehead, he picks up the empty liquor bottle and tries to pour. Nothing. He tosses it aside. Two gentlemen enter.
How do you do, Mr. Renault? I've not had the pleasure of meeting you before, though you've been with us for some time. I'm Mr. Fitch, the manager. Mr. Renault, we find ourselves in a very awkward predicament. We've just had a communication from some very old clients of ours, Mr. and Mrs. Sherman Montgomery. They've always occupied this particular suite. You know how people are. They say it's just like home to them. They're coming in tomorrow. Is that right, Mr. Hetfield?
Yes, tomorrow afternoon.
There you are. Under the circumstances, I'm afraid that we shall have to ask you for these rooms.
Oh. What other rooms can you give me?
Well, that's just the trouble. You see, we're so terribly full up. The horse show and... Mr. Hetfield, is there any place that we can put Mr. Renault?
I'm afraid not, Mr. Fitch.
It's quite all right. All right. As a matter of fact, I was just about to notify your office I was leaving. Some friends of mine. Private car. Palm Beach. When would you want me to,
Well, there's no hurry. Shall we say noon tomorrow, Mr. Renault?
Oh, certainly.
Thank you very much. So sorry to have inconvenienced you in this way.
As they walk out, Hatfield glares at Larry's back. The door swings closed behind them. Across the room, Larry's gaze shifts wildly back and forth. His expression crumbles as he leans against the mantelpiece. He drops his head onto his arm and balls his hands into tight fists. Gazing into the fireplace, he notices a gas valve beside several logs. As he bends to get a closer look, his eyes widen and his mouth hangs open. He swivels toward the door, stumbles over, and quickly turns a key in the lock. Larry pulls off his tailcoat and stuffs it into the crack under the door, then uses an overcoat to completely seal it off. Next, he reaches for a light switch. Shadows fill the room. He grabs a garment bag off the sofa, which knocks the empty bottle to the floor. Then he goes to the bedroom door and shuts it. Larry shoves the bag against the door crack, then staggers into the center of the room and stops for a moment. He walks over to a small table, picks up Paula's photograph and takes it to a window, which he slides open. A breeze ruffles the sheer curtains. Larry totters against the window frame and gazes at the photo. Folding it in half, he rips it into small pieces. He sticks out his hand and lets the torn fragments drop. Leaning out, Larry stares down after the falling pieces, then shuts the window. In the darkened room, he steps to the mirror and combs his fingers through his hair, slicking it back. Then he straightens his white bow tie and puts on his smoking jacket. Suavely eyeing his reflection, he primps his mustache with a debonair flick of his wrist. Larry goes to the other side of the room and switches on a lamp beside the fireplace. He glances around for a moment, then turns a chair toward the hearth. He tilts the lampshade, throwing a spotlight onto the chair. Larry takes a breath, kneels beside the fireplace, and grabs hold of the gas valve. He turns it counterclockwise. Larry slowly stands, straightens his shoulders, steps to the chair, and sits. He adjusts the lampshade again so the light shines directly onto his face. Then he sweeps his hands through his hair, brushing every strand into place. Leaning back in the chair, he lays his left hand over his heart. His chest heaves with several deep breaths. After a moment, his hand slides down from his chest and drops to his side. Larry's breathing slows. Amid the shadows, the lamplight illuminates his placid, perfectly composed features. Now, the white-haired Hattie walks through the Jordans' drawing room.
Ed.
She wears a dark, sleeveless evening gown.
Ed, where are you?
A balding, bespectacled man enters in a tux.
I'm coming.
Tucking his shirt front into his vest, he hurries to join her.
She's got music.
I hear it.
He trips on a small flight of steps.
Now, Ed, it isn't going to be so terrible.
Not so terrible. Get into this uniform to meet a bunch of fatheads I don't want to know and miss that Greta Garbo picture I've been waiting for 2 months? What's your idea of terrible?
Don't you want to meet Larry Renault? That's better than going to a movie.
That has been.
And Carlotta Vance?
And Jenny Lind, is she coming?
Now, Ed, Millie's done a lot of things for us. Helps her with my clothes. Besides, who can you get at 6:45 but relatives?
All right. I'm a relative and I'm here. Come on, let's get it over with.
Careful of the steps.
I know.
He trips again. In the foyer, Millicent comes down the staircase and crosses to a string quartet.
That's very nice, but do you mind? Not quite so loud. There'll be people in there talking, you know. Thank you.
Dressed in a pale chiffon gown, she enters the drawing room.
Hello, Ed.
Hello.
Hello, Hattie.
Oh. Well, where's Oliver?
Upstairs. He's got a headache or something.
Me too.
Packard saunters in with Kitty on his arm.
How nice. So lovely to see you.
How are you, Mrs. Jordan? You know, Mrs. Packard, I believe.
Of course. How lovely of you to come.
So nice of you to ask us, I'm sure.
Mrs. Packard, may I present my cousin, Mr. and Mrs. Loomis? Mr. Packard?
I'm pleased
Hi,
to meet
how do you,
you
do,
I'm
Mr.
Sure.
Loomis? And how are you, Mrs. Loomis?
How do you do?
You know, for a minute there, I had you wrong. I figured that maybe you were Ferncliff.
You're close. I'm pinch hitting for him.
Hattie elbows him.
What's the matter?
Millicent eyes them sternly, then turns to the Packards.
I'm so sorry to disappoint you, but Lord Ferncliff was taken frightfully ill with neuritis this afternoon.
I'm so sorry. Do you mean to say that Ferncliff won't be here?
Yes, isn't it terrible? They had to rush him off to Florida.
Kitty throws back her head and laughs. Dan glowers at her. She covers her mouth.
I don't care for Florida, do you? Have you ever been to Florida? I love it. We're not going down this winter. Are you?
I don't know. Are we going to Florida this winter, sweetheart?
Well, I wouldn't count on it if I were you.
I'll miss it so. It's so wonderful to have nothing to do, just to lie all day in the sun.
Yes, but you've got to be awful careful that you don't get blistered. You know, my skin's terribly delicate, and I don't dare expose it.
Turning for a drink, she reveals her entirely backless gown.
Pardon me.
Millicent greets Dr. Talbot and his wife, Lucy.
Hello, Lucy.
Hello, Millicent.
Oh, what a
How are you,
look
charming.
Let me see, you know everyone, don't you?
The others shake hands with a couple.
Glad to see you.
I haven't seen you around the house lately. What's the matter? Did the patient get well on you?
Oh, yes. She's getting along very well without me. Aren't you, Mrs. Peck?
Well, I get along better when you're looking after me.
Packard slaps Talbot on the back. Carlotta breezes in carrying one of her dogs.
Do forgive me. I had to bring him. He wouldn't stay at home. He cried and he cried. Didn't you, Tarzan?
Isn't he sweet? Carlotta, you know Mrs. Talbot, don't you? And my cousin, Mrs. Loomis?
What do you think of Bunny Ferncliff? Dashing off to Florida and ruining your whole dinner party. You know, I went directly from here to the hotel and found his telegram. Off on a fishing trip. Love your America. Never felt better in my life. Caroline and I want you to join us. Wire Palm Beach and the Bunny. Isn't Bunny a swine?
Millicent bows her head.
I'd rather go away in the winter than in the summer. I love New York in the summer.
Where's Paula? I'm just dying to see her again.
Ernest came back tonight. They're in the library talking. They're going to be married, you know. Ernest de Graaf.
De Graaf? De Graaf? I think I knew his father.
She eyes her brooch.
I did. Well, I think I'll barge along and talk to Paula alone in the library.
She struts past Ed, who naps in a hallway chair.
Oh, my dear. You poor little man. You look so lonely. Here.
Tarzan will keep you company.
She dumps the dog. In the library.
And then I had a little time, so I went to Budapest. Say, there's a place we've got to go on our honeymoon.
Ernest, while you've been away, there's something
Carlotta bursts in.
Ah, there you are, you two turtle doves. Paula.
Carlotta.
And this is Ernest. I'm Carlotta Vance. And don't tell me that your grandfather saw me when he was a boy.
Well, how did you know that I was Ernest?
Oh, I can tell an Ernest 20 feet off. Say, do you suppose you two could stop billing and cooing just long enough for me to have a little word with Paula?
All right. The next billing and cooing will take place at 8:45.
Yes. He leaves.
Oh, dear, he's charming, isn't he? So like his father. I hope he'll be as generous. Why haven't you been to see me, Paula? I'm at the Versailles.
Oh, the Versailles.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, of course, I must come. That's on East 48th Street, isn't it?
She coolly lights a cigarette.
Not quite. East 53rd Street, I believe.
Oh, yes. Yes, I was thinking of something else.
Yes, I suppose you were. You know, I'm on the 8th floor. Curiously enough, just down the hall from...
As Carlotta sits on a sofa, Paula stares down at her through heavy-lidded eyes.
Oh, you've seen me then. Well, what of it?
I'm not ashamed.
Oh, no, dear.
Go ahead, tell Mother. I'm going to tell her myself. It's funny. I should think at least you would understand.
I haven't said I don't understand.
Paula sits beside her.
Do you? Then for heaven's sake, help me. Talk to Father for me, will you? You can help me.
I'm sorry. I can't. Not now.
All right. You want me to give him up? Well, I won't. You're just like all the rest of the old people.
Oh, I'm sure I am. But...
You think you know what's best because you're old. You think you can tell me what to do with my life. Well, you can't because it's my life. I'm young. I've got a right to go to the man I love.
Oh, I'm sure you have, dear.
But what? What could you possibly say that could keep me from going to him?
She quickly rises, turning her back.
Simply that he's killed himself.
With a dazed expression, Paula slowly turns to face Carlotta.
That's not so. Can't be.
They found him just as I was starting to come here. Oh, poor Paula. I'm so sorry.
Where are you going? To him?
No, listen. Listen, Paula. I realize that I'm an old woman, and young people have a right to do what they want. But at this time, I think you should consider someone else. Your father.
Paula's eyes fill with tears.
My poor Larry. He's dead, Carlotta.
And nothing can be done. That's the unfortunate thing about death. It's so terribly final. Even the young can't do anything about it.
Paula covers her face.
Oh, Paula, really. Wait, listen, shh. Listen, darling.
Cradling her, Carlotta helps the girl to the sofa. Back in the drawing room, Millicent confers with Hattie.
I wonder what's keeping Oliver.
What would you say he's missed by not being in this room the last 10 minutes?
Oh, I don't know. I guess German pictures are all right if you like German pictures.
Oh, say, Mrs. Talbot, I've just been talking with your husband and I find that we have a lot in common.
Yes?
Yeah. We're members of the same golf club.
Oh, how nice.
I wonder when we eat.
The maid enters.
Pardon, madame.
Yes, Dora.
Will you please come upstairs? Mr. Jordan isn't feeling well.
Very well, Dora. I don't know how I've got to.
Well, maybe I better go up and see him with you, Mother.
Perhaps you'd better.
Yes, surely.
Upstairs, Oliver lies in bed.
Oliver.
I'm all right, Millicent. Don't worry, please. It's something I had for lunch, huh, Talbot?
Certainly. Have you any spirits of ammonia?
I think there's some in the medicine chest. I'll get it.
Please.
I'll be right back, Oliver.
Talbot stands over him with a troubled look.
I'm
there,
all right.
There, old man. Take it easy, old man. Take it easy. That's right.
Oliver's head falls back onto his pillow. Talbot stares down at him for a moment, then goes into the next room. Downstairs in the library, Carlotta holds a compact and uses a powder puff to dab Paula's face.
Here. Here you are, dear. You do this. You can do it much better than I can. And remember, we must not spoil Millicent's dinner. They probably won't know anything about this news until tomorrow.
I'm all right now, thank you.
Of course you are, my dear. Now, Ernest... Ernest won't notice a thing.
Paula returns the compact to Carlotta.
I don't want to see Ernest. I don't want to see anybody.
Oh, yes, you do, dear. But I want to tell you one thing. Don't ever let him know anything about this. Because if there's one thing I know, it's men. I ought to. It's been my life work.
I can't ever love another man.
No, of course you can't, dear. But if you should, you know, someone like Ernest, he won't want to know anything about your past. Just lump it in the past. Come on, dear.
Carlotta takes her hand and they rise. Upstairs in the dimly lit master bedroom, Oliver drowsily rubs his head. Sitting up, he gets to his feet and holds the footboard a moment for support. He steps to a chair, picks up his tailcoat, and takes it over to a mirror where he carefully ties his bow tie. Oliver opens the door and finds Millicent seated at a table, dabbing her nose with a tissue. The doctor stands behind her.
Why, Millicent, what is it?
I had to tell her, Oliver.
He embraces Oliver. Millicent.
Down, dear, please.
Darling.
Sit down, Oliver, sit down. That's it. Here, drink this.
Oliver sips a glass of clear liquid.
Why didn't you tell me? Why didn't you tell me?
Dear, it isn't as bad as all that, is it?
No, not at all.
Talbot walks off.
Oliver.
Oh, dear heart, I would have told you all about it.
No, you wouldn't. And I've been too busy to notice while you've been suffering. Oh, Oliver, I do love you. And I've always loved you. Even though I have turned into a silly, stupid, useless wife.
Oh, no. But you haven't, Millie. You haven't. As a matter of fact, you've turned out a much better wife than I have a husband, I'm afraid.
No.
Yes. You see, the thing that's troubling me most, Millie, is that, well, I'm afraid the Jordan line is gone.
Gone?
We're broke.
Oh. But everybody's broke, darling. Don't let that worry you. We'll economize. That's what we'll do. We'll economize. Now let me see.
She goes to a phone and starts to dial.
I really don't have to take a box for that charity thing Saturday night now. You know, for backward orphans or something. And I'll cancel my hairdressers tomorrow. You leave everything to me. And with Paula married to Ernest, we'll take a smaller place somewhere. Hello, Embassy Club? This is Mrs. Oliver Jordan. I want to cancel my table for after the theater tonight. Thank you. And you go to bed. Right after dinner, darling. Oh, darling, we're going to be happier than ever. You'll see.
Downstairs.
I like it in New York in the summer. Gee, I've had some swell times on penthouse parties.
All my life I've wanted to be a penthouse girl.
Yeah, you'd be good at that.
Patty shoots Ed a look.
Well, I'll be seeing you.
Kitty sashays off.
Ed.
Ed reluctantly turns from her retreating form to follow his wife. In the foyer, the Jordans descend the stairs.
Joseph?
Yes, madam?
You can announce dinner in a few moments.
Yes, madam.
The butler bows as they stroll to the drawing room arm in arm.
Oh, hello, Hattie.
Hello, Oliver.
How are you, Ed?
Oh, I'm fine. You all right?
Oh, fine, thanks.
Oliver, I've missed you.
I'm sorry, I had to telephone some business.
You're not cross with Carlotta, are you?
You know I love you.
The Packards.
Go on, tell Jordan.
Shut up.
Go on and tell him.
Shut up.
If you don't, you'll be sorry as long as you live.
Shut up.
Oliver approaches.
How do you do, Mrs. Packard?
Oh, glad to see you, I'm sure.
Well, Oliver, how are you?
Glad to see you.
I'm delighted, I assure you.
I think we'll go in to dinner. Seems rather rude not to wait for Mr. Renault, but after all, it's nearly 9 o'clock.
Oh, yeah.
You're not going to tell him?
As the Packards step away, Kitty discreetly kicks her husband's leg. He kicks her in the fanny. Then both plaster big grins on their faces. Kitty turns to Oliver.
Mr. Jordan, I've got...
I'll tell him.
Dan never will let me talk to anyone that's attractive. Oh, well.
Oliver, I've got something very important to tell you.
I've got some news for you.
News? When a man bites a dog, that's news.
They all head for the dining room, Ernest with Paula.
I hope you like that stuff I brought from Paris for you. One of them's a knockout.
You came near losing the Jordan lines this afternoon.
Near?
A dirty crook by the name of Baldridge tried to pull a fast one.
You don't mean...
Yes, but I saved it for you. We headed him off.
Say, old man, I've been awfully unfair to you.
Oh, no, no.
I was reading a book the other day.
Carlotta skids to a stop.
Reading a book?
Yes, it's all about civilization or something. A nutty kind of a book. Do you know that the guy says that machinery is going to take the place of every profession?
Oh, my dear. That's something you need never worry about.
Say, I want to sit next to Oliver. Oliver, where are you?
The women join the others in the dining room, where everyone surrounds a lavishly set table adorned with candelabras. Two large folding doors draw closed, and in the now empty foyer, a title appears. The End.